the show.
You have all made it through the dance. You have all made it
Coming to you from the X-Access, it's John of All Trades with your host, John X.
Welcome to the John of All Trades podcast, episode 62. I'm your host, John X. Thank you for joining us. Glad to have you back once again. Good episode this week, you guys. Good episode coming up. I'm excited about it. It's with Lonnie Porter. And it's a rare episode that I actually get to talk to someone with this much experience and this much insight and this much of a resume. Lonnie Porter, former head men's basketball coach at Regis University. He's got 538 career victories, and we spend a lot of time in this episode talking hoops. Quick note, we recorded this episode after game 2, I think, of the NBA Finals, where it was 1-1 Golden State Cleveland, and he mentions J.R. Smith making a bunch of weird fouls and turnovers and stuff, and Cleveland ended up winning that game, but they lost the series 4-2. So it's just a quick note about that. We also talk a lot about his foundation, the Porter Billups Leadership Academy, which is just an awesome piece of business. And we talk about his origin, how he got Chauncey Billups involved, where they're going, how they've grown, what's next for it. And he's just an inspiring man. And I could not be more thrilled to have the opportunity to talk to him. And got to give a quick shout out to my friend Chris Niehoff, a former colleague at my last job. He introduced me to Lonnie, and Lonnie graciously agreed to give me an hour of his time and sit down and chat with me and tell me all these great war stories from his career and the work he's doing with the Porter Billups Leadership Academy. And I'm just very privileged. So thank you very much, Chris, for getting us set up and talking in this episode. One other quick note about Lonnie is, and this will come across in the episode, he's one of the warmest, just most delightful people I've ever met. And before the mics were on, we were kind of walking through Regis. Like, we met on this one part of campus and we had to walk to another part. And on the way, he was just saying hi to everyone. Just like the friendliest dude ever. He's like, "Hey, how you doing, my man? You having a good day?" And just making small talk. And I was thinking, I could stand to be more like this man. I would love to be more like him. And I tell you what, when you're in someone's presence like that, and they just immediately brighten your day and make you want to be better yourself, that's how you know you're in the presence of someone who is just great. So proud to bring this episode to you. The Porter Billups Leadership Academy, you can find that at www.porter-billups.org. And there will be a link on the companion blog piece. So check out johnofalltrades.us. Additionally, one other plug I'd like to do. This week, I was on the These Things Matter podcast with Kevin and Taylor, and it's a podcast where they talk about pop culture autobiographically. And so we were both mentioned in the same Denver Post article together. And so I said, "Hey, you know, I'd love to have you guys on my show. I'd love to do your show." And so we started talking about it, and I end up talking about the Karate Kid on their show. And it's a great episode. I just got done listening to it. I think you'll really enjoy it. Make sure you go check it out. It is thesethingsmatterpodcast.com. I'm episode 158. You'll see my smiling mug there when you click on the link for 158, The Karate Kid with John Ekstrom. That's me. And yeah, be sure to give that a listen. Also, be sure to pay a visit to our sponsor, 4Degrees, the number 4, DEGRE.ES. I have had the privilege now that I am on my own to do some projects with them and work with them firsthand, and I'm just blown away. The work that they do in the social media marketing space and the advertising space and reaching consumers that you otherwise have to spend a lot of money, a lot of effort to target, they do it so much more efficiently and they do it brilliantly. Their results and their returns are just unparalleled. So check them out. 4Degrees, the number 4, DEGRE.ES. Let's get to this week's episode. Lonnie Porter, the former men's basketball coach at Regis University, also the founder of the Porter Billups Leadership Academy, and just an all-around great dude. We talk hoops. We talk his legacy. He talks great stories involving all sorts of people. Chauncey Billups, Oscar Robertson, Henry Iba. The names just go on and on. So one of my favorite episodes, a great dude. Give it a listen. Here it comes, episode 62. Lonnie Porter starts right now.
Thank you.
Did you catch the NBA Finals last night?
It was awesome. It was a great game. You know, Cleveland tried to give the game away. I was like, man, what are you doing? And some of the things that JR was doing, the fouls that he was making.
Bad fouls.
JR, you're not being very smart with this thing. We're trying to win this game, you know.
Right.
You know, let's play a little smarter, you know.
Are you going for Cleveland?
I really don't care who win.
Right.
And the reason why, I think both of them are quality teams. I like the Splash Brothers. I like them a lot.
I do too.
But the thing that LeBron has done going back to Cleveland, I would like to see him win. So, but if, you know, the Warriors win, it really doesn't make a whole lot of difference to me.
No, nor do I think it has a big impact on his legacy. I mean, he's really carrying that team with Love down and now Irving down.
Right.
I mean, that's tough. And you watch him, he just takes over a game.
No, he does. He does. And he's carrying the whole team, just like you said. But legacies are short remembered. And I'm going to tell you how that goes. I'm old enough to have seen a lot of this stuff.
Sure.
It's like Oscar Robertson, for example.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know him personally, but he grew up in the same neighborhood I grew up in.
Right.
And I'm looking at him about 5 years ago at the Final Four in his hometown in Indianapolis, Indiana.
Yeah.
And he's walking around to check in at the hotel, and no one knows who he is.
Yeah.
No one knows who he is. And I know that's 40 or 50 years ago.
Right.
But, you know, people – They forget you pretty quick.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I grew up watching Michael Jordan.
Mm-hmm.
And so, he is basketball to me. And I think even 5 years ago, you would hear the arguments MJ versus LeBron.
Right.
And it was always tilted towards MJ. And I think now that, you know, the people who watched MJ are getting a little older, and you have some younger people who don't have the appreciation for watching Michael in
right.
his prime.
Right.
I think the argument's shifting a little bit towards LeBron, which to me was unfathomable. I go, really? And I mean, LeBron, I'd love to see them match up in their prime, because LeBron is just built so big. He's built like Karl Malone.
Oh, heck, he's 6'8 and a half, 265,
yeah.
Chiseled, nothing but muscle. You know, like a freight train.
Yeah.
You know, coming down the track. How would you like to get in front of him and pick up a charge if you're a little skinny guard?
Right.
So it is no way.
Be pretty brutal.
There's no way.
So sitting here talking about legacy with Lonnie Porter here at Regis, not in your office, but in one of the conference rooms. Thank you for taking the time to be on my show.
John, thank you very much, for having me.
Yeah.
And, you know, Chris, who's a friend of yours.
Right.
And a friend of mine. So it's a mutual thing.
Yeah. We gotta give a shout out to Chris Niehoff for setting this up, because he introduced us.
Right. Right. And so, you know, Chris, been known Chris for a long time. When he was a student here at Regis University, he was an assistant sports information director, did an excellent job, always has been just a super person.
Yeah.
So I'm glad we're giving him a shout out.
Oh, yeah, he deserves it. I mean, without him, we would not be here together.
Correct.
So you just recently retired as head basketball coach of Regis. How's it finding you?
I feel good.
You feel good?
Yeah, I feel good. It was it brings back every time I say that, and I tell people it's a guy did a little thing on Google and a YouTube, and it got about 7 million hits. A little kid that was coming out of surgery, and his parents asked him, I said, "How do you feel, Johnny? He said, "I feel good." So that's the expression when I say that. I feel good.
You feel good?
I feel good. About basketball, that's behind me. It was a great journey. It was a beautiful journey. And not just because of basketball, but
sure.
mostly because of the people that I met, the young kids whose lives I got involved with. I just, you know, I just loved it. It was a ball.
Because it was, I mean, 538 career victories as head coach of Regis.
Mm-hmm.
And how many years? 33, was it?
38.
38.
38, I was head coach here at Regis University.
After that much time, how do you know when it's time to walk away?
Well, you know, you feel it in your heart. When you, you know, don't have that burning desire to really coach, to make people better, you know, my style was always very aggressive, you know, very vocal, and that is passé now.
Really?
You know, that's pretty much passé. You know, you look at a kid wrong now, you know, that's verbal abuse, you know.
Really?
Oh, yeah. The whole game, it has changed as far as coaching kids and reaching kids and touching kids. All of that has changed. And touching kids mean touching their heart, not them physically.
Right.
And so, you know, and either you adjust, you know, or you take a seat and step back. And I did adjust to it, but I wasn't happy, yeah. You know, with the stern discipline that you cannot use anymore.
So what types of things became off limits, or how did the culture shift in your estimation?
Well, I think that, you know, one of the things that's happening is that the culture, it shifted, I think mostly through parents. You know, a lot of parents now, they want to be their son or daughter's buddy,
okay,
and not give them the discipline. It's all centered around discipline, and I'm talking about just being, you know, hardcore discipline. You know, put in the time. If you want a dollar, you know, earn it.
Earn the dollar.
You know, but everybody wants to get paid, but nobody wants to work, and that's the same way with basketball. People don't want to put in the time. Like, I see guys on TV, and that, like Steph Curry.
Yeah.
Do you have any idea how much time he put in to enable him to handle the basketball the way he does? I was working with my little grandson yesterday, and he's 9 years old. And I was telling him, I said, Jack, man, you got to put in the time, you know, handling. And he does, but not as much time as needed for him to be a tremendous basketball player.
To be exceptional.
Right.
Is what you're driving at.
Right.
And the thing about Steph Curry is, I mean, he came out of Davidson, which is a top flight academic institution, just as Regis is. So, I mean, when you talk about putting in the time, you know, going to a school like that certainly makes you well-rounded, and I imagine gives you a great work ethic.
Definitely, because it transfers over, you know, to the classroom and from the classroom to the basketball floor. And I have an old saying is that the way you play the game of basketball is the way you live your life. You cannot separate the two. It's pretty hard for a kid to be an All-American basketball player and not achieve much of anything in the classroom.
Right.
And a lot of that is not, and I realize that some kids are, there's an exception to the rule, but most of the time it's the lack of effort that you put in.
Right. I agree. I mean, I do public relations for a living, and, I, you know, through that you get to do some cool things. You know, I've met the governor and some senators, and I talk to the media, and now I am the media. But I talk to college kids, and they go, man, that's really cool. How do I do that? You got to put in a lot of time doing the ditch digging.
You're right.
I mean,
pay your dues.
Yeah, a lot of it's not fun.
Pay your dues.
Yeah, I mean, I think about going to basketball practice when I stopped playing once I hit about junior high, but the amount of free throws I used to shoot.
Right.
And that was only a fraction of what I probably should have done. But basketball was not, I knew I didn't have the God-given talent, the height, or anything. But, you know, I remember Dan Issel talking about the way he used to do shoot free throws all the time.
Right. Well, at least you knew, John. See, there are some kids that everyone thinks they can play basketball.
Really?
Everyone thinks they can coach basketball.
Really?
So they sit up in the stands like the Monday morning quarterback
right.
for the Broncos. You know, everybody thinks they can do it until they sit in that chair, sit in that seat. You know, it's a tough job. But everyone thinks they can play basketball. And so I remember when I was in high school.
Basketball's hard.
I don't know. I can remember wrestlers. You know, in gym class, they thought that they could play.
Just pick it up. And
Yeah. I can do this.
Okay.
I can do this. But you knew. So there are some kids that never accept that.
Hmm.
And they're not good basketball players. And the parents keep pushing and pushing and pushing. That's the other thing. When parents pushing, you know, their kids into a specific sport. Just let it happen. I never told my grandson that he had to play basketball. I never pushed it into, you know, forced him to do anything.
Yeah.
You know, it just came to him. He was around it. He didn't really pick it up until about a couple of years ago.
Hmm. And how old is he?
No, he's not. He's nine.
Yeah, yeah.
But to be honest with you, if he plans to be good, he needs to start working hard now.
Absolutely. I played – it was nice when I was growing up because I grew up in the 80s, and you could play – it seems like you could play all the sports if you wanted to.
You grew up in the 80s, John?
Yeah.
I've got shoes older than you.
Fair enough. But I grew up in the 80s, and you could play pretty much – I played all the sports. I played basketball, right. Baseball, swimming, tennis, golf. I played pretty much everything except football. It seems like now kids are getting specialized earlier and earlier and earlier. And I really – I like the experience of playing all the different sports, and the one I stuck with was swimming because swimming was the hardest.
Right. Oh, it's tough.
And I think – as a result of it being the hardest, it was the most rewarding. And I think when you face a little bit of adversity, if I can distill what you're saying down, there are kids who face some of the adversity and they don't want to accept that they need to step up their work a little bit.
Right. And that is true. That's across the board.
Yeah.
You know, when they're looking for a job or when they have a job.
Sure.
You know, you have to put in the time. You have to, you know, step it up if you want to be exceptional.
Absolutely. 100%. So take me back a little bit. I know you've moved on from basketball, but I would be remiss if we didn't cover it for at least a little bit here.
That's fine. I know I'm not opposed to, you know, talking about basketball, John, because basketball has been very good.
Yeah.
Very good to me and my family.
That's terrific. When you mentioned, you know, you're very, very aggressive, very sort of disciplinarian. What was your and that's relating to your players, what was the style of play that you preferred? How did you like to structure your teams, or did you structure your strategy around the talent that you had?
Okay, point one, my choice would be to play up-tempo.
Okay.
Would be to play up-tempo because it is, you know, the slow-down tactics is pretty boring. but, you know, you have to adjust to the talent level, especially at a place like Regis University. I've coached it all. I've had some great mentors. Mm-hmm. You know, I've had from this side, I've had Henry Iba, Coach Henry Iba, Mr. Iba, where I learned, you know, from between Mr. Iba and his son, Mo Iba, slow down, be very patient, very disciplined, you know, type of basketball.
Let the game come to you.
Right, right. To John McClendon. You know, who was an old coach with the Rockets, had won three national champs. Most people have not heard of him.
Right.
Run three national championships at Tennessee State University, an old NAIA. Tremendous coach. Mr. Fast Break Basketball. I used to sit and talk to him, sit down on the floor. He used to spend a night with me and talk basketball. And about fast break basketball,
yeah.
You know, it's at this altitude, just run them in the ground, run them until
the Doug Moe philosophy.
Oh yeah, yeah. And so, you know, I've had both. And so what I did, you know, I put both of them together and I came up with something in the middle of the road, depending on the type of the talent level that I had. Like I coached at Manual High School in 1972 and we ran up and down the court. We were fast, great pressure.
Yeah.
But we came up against a team in Wheat Ridge High School. It had three Division I players.
And really?
When I name these guys, you will know at least one of them.
Okay.
Kerberia, Steve Kerberia.
Steve Kerberia.
Jeff Fosnes, who went to Vanderbilt. Kerberia ended up going to Denver University. And Dave Logan. who went, you know, to see you, and he got drafted in three sports so they could play. And I knew that no way in the heck that we were going to run up and down with those guys, those type of athletes, you know. So we were averaging about 85 points a game, and they were averaging about 105.
Yikes.
Yeah, no, they could play.
That's a shootout.
And so what we did, we slowed it down. We slowed it down. I think the final score was about 63-60. was the final score, and we won. But you have to adjust to the talent level that you have and to the team that you're playing.
Sure.
So, and if you can't play structured half court basketball, even though you can fast break, it's hard. It's hard to win.
Yeah.
Because now you have to be able to run some sets. in half court.
Yeah.
You know, and just like we saw last night with Cleveland and the Warriors. When Cleveland was not moving the basketball and it was not running sets, it was just all LeBron
all
penetrate
isolation.
And create.
Yeah.
You know, that's tough. It's not real hard to defend, although it is hard to defend LeBron.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, you have to have some movement. You have to need execution.
That's why the Warriors are so exciting to watch, because the way they seem to always make the extra pass, which is just fantastic. It reminds me of a more disciplined style of, remember the D'Antoni Suns,
mm-hmm.
the 7 seconds or less
right.
Suns,
right.
who seemed to be all transition game. And granted, they had Steve Nash, but when they got into playoff basketball, when it's more of a grind, they didn't seem to adjust as well as they perhaps could have.
Well, what happens, John, is that during the playoffs, teams adjust to you. They're not playing 82 games. They're playing a seven-game series.
That's true.
And so they're easy to it's easier to adjust to a team, and they're preparing for just one team at that time.
Yeah, so, instead of four teams in a week, right?
So
or whatever.
Yeah. So that's what happens with that situation.
Wow. So you grew up playing basketball, and you mentioned Oscar Robertson. I think he figures prominently in I read an interview you did with the Denver Post not that long ago,
mm-hmm.
and I feel like Oscar Robertson's name came up.
Right.
Would you mind recounting that anecdote?
Okay. It's a long story, but I'll make it short.
Okay.
I was raised in Indianapolis, Indiana, but I graduated from high school at East Waterloo High School and Waterloo, Iowa. And there's no such place as East Waterloo, but we like to make the distinction because East Waterloo means that you lived on that side of the tracks.
Sure, yeah.
West Waterloo mean that you lived on the rich side of the tracks.
Gotcha.
So, okay. So I always say that I graduated from East Waterloo High School, but I was raised in Indianapolis, Indiana, and I was a basketball king. I went to Christmas Addicts High School, which at that time was the number one high school team in the nation, number one high school basketball program in the nation.
Wow.
Because of all the players that they put out. And the most noted was Oscar Robertson. There were some before him, but the big O was the man. And so, you know, you emulated all these guys. And the thing that I like about, you know, basketball in those days, it was that it didn't matter, you know, who you were, what color your skin was, you know. If you were the man, like Rick Mount came after I did,
right.
Jimmy Rail came after Oscar. But whoever you were, that Monday after that team won the state championship, Bobby Plump was shooter in Hoosiers.
Oh, no
okay?
kidding.
See, I was 12 years old, about 12 years old when they won. It was the Milan Indians that won the state championship. No classifications, about 26 kids in the entire high school. See, and I experienced all of that. You know,
when you lived
there? No, I didn't live in Milan.
Right.
But I was a young kid and I saw all these kids.
Sure.
You know, like Bobby Plump was about your size. Bobby Plump was about 5'10 and a half, 5'11", and he was kind of chunky, you know, a little big head dude, you know, but could he play? Eventually ended up going to Butler University. But back to Oscar, you know, everybody, you know, Oscar was king.
Yeah.
Oscar was king. And my most, the moment that I remember, you know, the most was, you know, there's an area in west side of Indianapolis where I was raised. There was the projects, and the projects were really nice, we thought, because they were built of brick.
Yeah.
And so where I lived, I wish I could live in the projects. That would have been a step up.
Wow.
Okay?
Yeah.
So if you're in that environment, that in the center is a big, huge square, you know, nothing but apartments.
Yeah.
And so in the middle of that is a basketball court, and they had a great tournament there. You know, all the time. But during the day, little kids, we'd have the court because it was too hot for the big guys. They didn't want to play when the sun was up. But
sure.
Coming around 4:30, we had to get off the court. So the story goes like this. I had built a little reputation among my peers, the little guys.
Mm-hmm.
And so I said, I got next. And so the big guy says, no, you don't, little man. You don't have next. I said, because you have to get off the court at 5:00. You can't play anymore.
Right.
The big guys play. So I said, no, man. I said, I'm tired of you guys, you know, pushing us off the court. I got next. So finally, one guy stepped up and said, okay, you can have next.
Sure.
And so when you get next, if you lose, you're finished for the day.
Yeah, you're done.
Because there's so many guys waiting around. So we're playing. I mean, they're playing. So I'm picking my team and looking around. And then always guys that can't play want to go with you next. You
know,
you said, no, man, you can't play with me. You know, and so anyway, I see this guy walking. He's coming, the guy with this swagger, and I know who it is.
Yeah.
You know. And he's, at the time, he's probably about 6'4", but it looked like he's about 7 feet tall.
Well, sure.
You know, he's playing, he's a point guard.
How tall were you? He's old.
I was about 5'4", 5'3". About 5'4", 5'3". And so it's Oscar. And so I said, Oscar, I got next. Do you want to play? And he said, yeah, little man, I'll play with you.
Sweet.
You know, and so we held court, you know, until it got too dark to play. And so I remember, like it was yesterday, taking one shot the whole time.
Yeah.
All I was doing was hustling, diving after loose balls on the concrete,
yeah,
you know, and passing it to Oscar every chance I got. But now fast forward about, oh, heck, about 60 years, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And so the name of the projects was Lockfield, and that's the area where Oscar lived. So we're standing in Atlanta, Georgia, at the Final Four. Myself, some of my buddies, including Wade Houston, who was a friend of Oscar. He knows Oscar. Alan Houston's dad.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And so we're all standing there. Oscar comes by. And so they start talking. And so I just start staring at Oscar, just looking at him. And he would look at me, got kind of uncomfortable, and looked at me. Yeah, what's this guy looking at me, staring at me for?
Yeah.
And they're talking everything. And he turned and looked at me and like, you know, like, what is the problem? And I looked at him and I said, Lockfield. And he said, Lockfield, what do you know about Lockfield? You know? And I said, I was raised there. I was raised in that area. And so, but Oscar.
Did you say I was a little guy?
Oh, no. Oh, okay. Naturally, he don't remember me. You know, I would like to say, yeah, you remember that moment. No, I don't think so.
Yeah, you remember better than he does.
But anyway, that's who Oscar was. You know, basketball back there is just king.
Yeah.
You know, we played for the city championship. Never will forget it. When I was 11 years old, the city championship there's over 100 some public schools from grades 1 through 7. And, there's 5,000 people, you know, there's a championship game, you know, seeing little 11, 12 year old kids play.
Jeez.
No, it's unbelievable. There are gymnasiums there. In a city, like a town, where the population would be like 8,000, the gym would see 10,000.
Wow.
You know, no, it's unbelievable. So, you know, I'll go off on a tangent when you're talking about
I love that.
Okay.
I mean, that's what we do here. That's what the show's all about.
Cool. Let me tell you why we're going there. And this is, I'm really enjoying this, John.
Yes.
Yeah. This is fun. This is so cool. And I told you about, John McClendon. Let me give you a little story about a guy.
Okay.
That my other mentor. So I sneaked into the Air Force Academy back in the day, I think it was 72.
Mm-hmm.
Sneaked into the Air Force Academy because the Pan American team, which was a prelude to the Olympic team.
Sure, yeah.
Back in the day, they don't do the Pan American Games anymore.
Yeah.
So the guys are practicing. I'm sitting up in the stands, and I'm by myself, and I'm taking notes.
Yeah.
And I was coaching Emmanuel High School. I'm taking notes because on one end, listen to this, one end there's Bobby Knight.
Yeah.
Okay, and the other end there's Don Haskins.
Yeah.
And they're running drills for guys trying to make the Pan American team.
Yeah.
And so I'm just sitting there taking notes and everything. Keep in mind, I'm not supposed to be in there.
Right.
Just down in Colorado Springs. I drove my old Mustang down there.
How'd you
there.
Sneak in? Did you find an unguarded door?
No, yeah. Basically, I just walked in. Just walked in, you know, and just went up, you know, because no one else was done, just walked in and, you know, got on up there. You know, the hardest part was just getting through the security gate.
Yeah.
And I won't tell you about that. So I'm there. And so this old guy comes up to me. And he sits down, and he said with this old Oklahoma drawl, you know, he says, "How you doing, young man?" And I said, "I'm doing good." I said, "How you doing?" He said, "Fine, fine." So he's sitting there, and he had his old cardigan sweater on, And he's sitting in dress slacks and brown shoes on that was shined. And so I'm kind of looking at him, and I'm saying, like, and he keeps asking me questions about basketball. And I said, man, who is this dude, man? Yeah. Like, I'm trying to, this old timer, I'm trying to, you know, trying to get all the
trying to learn here.
Trying to learn here, everything I can. And anyway, so Bobby Knight, finally, they stopped the drills, and he turns and he says, and they never call him coach. They call him Mr.
Okay.
Said, Mr. Iba said, is that enough? Yeah, Bobby. Yeah, that's enough. That's enough. Let him go. Send him to the shower. Don Haskins.
Yeah, yeah.
Don, let him go. Take him. And I said, oh my God. this is Henry Iba. You know, he's the Olympic coach.
Uh-huh.
Won a national championship, a couple of them, at Oklahoma State. And I said, oh my goodness. And I said, Mr. Iba, I said, I had no idea. That's all right, young man. You know, wish you nothing but the best of luck. You know, best of luck.
Wow.
And so that was, you know, I've had some just great experiences with all the old timers. You know, you're talking about Ray Meyer. Used to sit down and talk to him up in the stands when nobody was around. He coached George Mikan, his first great big man.
Yeah.
You know, I'm sitting up talking to him up in the stands in Chicago. And so about 3 years later, he gets a kid named Mark Aguirre, Terry Cummins, Skip Dillard, and all those guys. And then DePaul became, you know, number one team in the nation. I couldn't get within 2 miles of him, you
right.
know.
Yeah,
but when he wasn't winning, that's the point that I was telling you. You know, when your time comes, you know, you take advantage of it and enjoy it because, you know, it's fleeting. It's fleeting.
It's absolutely fleeting.
But those are some old war stories. Thought that you might be interested
I love
in
that.
John.
It's amazing to on this podcast to hear a name like George Mikan, you know, or you know, Mark Aguirre. How do you think a guy like George Mikan would fare in today's NBA?
Oh boy. I watch Oscar play. Man, I'm going to get back to George Mikan. Watch Oscar play, and those guys look like they're going in slow motion. And Oscar was a perfect pro. He averaged a triple double for 1 year in 61, 62.
Okay.
He averaged a triple double.
Amazing.
You know, for the entire year. He still would be good. And also George Mikan would be good. But
I
don't think that he would be great, but he'd be very good. He'd be very good. Now, so George Mikan would be very good because the big guys, they're just bigger and taller, but their skill level has not changed that much because there are very few centers. So George Mikan still would be able to hold his own.
Interesting.
He still would be able, but
they'd both be starters, do you think?
Mikan definitely.
Okay.
You know. Oscar would probably, be a two instead of a one.
Okay.
He would be a two instead of one. Those one,
probably.
Those are like Chauncey always say, you know, he says, LP, man, you have no idea how tired I am at the end of the season from chasing those little quick point guards around, you know, for a whole year for 82 games.
Yeah. Chasing around the Currys and the Rondos of the world.
Yeah, man. Oh boy. Wow. Man, oh, that is tough. So the speed and quickness of the guards has changed a lot. The big guys, there are not that many big guys that can play, that can play center.
Mm.
Then they all want to be, you know, shooters.
Yeah, no, I mean, that makes sense. And it's funny, you look at a guy like DeAndre Jordan, who not a great foul shooter and sort of. Wait, is he not?
No, he's awful. He's bad.
You got me there.
I'm messing with you, John.
I'm messing with you. But yeah, no, you think about that, and he can be a little bit unhinged. And you look back at a guy like George Mikan, you know, I haven't seen a lot of him, but very disciplined.
Right.
You know, and I think that would be an asset even today.
Right. Back in the day, it was, to be a center, you know, it was an art.
But these guys now are just so doggone big and strong and powerful, yeah. Man. Now I think offensively he would be okay. Where he would have a problem would probably be defensively.
Interesting.
And trying to, you know, these guys now, man, they're rushing toward 300.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
So that's, you know, so that'd be pretty tough.
Everyone is just bigger and stronger. I mean, you look at the NFL of today, mm-hmm. and lines, you know, offensive and defensive lines, they average 300 pounds, whereas a 300 pounder was pretty rare even, I don't know, 10, 15 years ago.
Right.
It's weird.
Right. So. No, they're, I mean, you know, the exercises, the weight programs. And when I was young, you know, you couldn't touch a weight. They didn't want you messing with it. Mess up your shot.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I know that without a doubt, I would have been much better if I had a weight program.
Interesting.
Weight and conditioning.
Wow.
You know, program, without a doubt.
Well, I'll tell you what, we could spend this whole hour talking basketball, but I want to make sure we talk about the Porter Billups Leadership Academy.
Sure.
Because that's what you're doing now. And that's your whole focus right now, right?
Right, right. And I love it. I love it that I can just focus. My wife said to me as recently as this morning, said, "You seem so relaxed, you know." I said, "I'm having fun." I said, "All I'm doing, instead of having two jobs, I just have one."
Yeah.
Because the Porter Billups grew into a monster. It started off 20 years ago in 1995, 96. And so what happened was that we had a guy gave us $7,500 to start it. And I started it with my daughter, Stacy Porter Bentley, and Miss Rose Casagrande, who at that time was Rose Odoricio.
Okay.
And they did the teaching. We had 22 students. They did the teaching, and I did the grunt work. And the way we got the kids,
the grunt work, like funding.
Oh, the grunt work. Oh man, I'm driving the old raggedy people mover going by to pick them up.
Oh,
you know, I'm doing all that stuff, all the running around work. You know, coach, go do this. Coach, go do that. That was me.
You're
you know,
gopher.
Yeah, I was right. You know, all the grunt work. You know, and so that's an old Army term. I wasn't in the Army, but I always like to use it. So we started it, you know, 20 years ago. And it's all education. It's all about education. Mm-hmm. Has nothing to do with sports. When people hear, you know, Lonnie Porter, Chauncey Billup, they, you know, probably associate it with basketball as a sport. It's a camp. It's not a camp. It's an academic academy. And it's turned into, now we have on average 150 kids every summer for 3 weeks here on the campus. And so you say, why? I started it because I felt that there was a need. I saw my young kids, my young basketball players come to me, and life skills, they didn't possess, you know, what we teach. They didn't possess the, like, simple things like how to try to apply for a job.
Right.
How to dress when you go for an interview.
Sure.
So we teach young kids. We start kids at 8, 9 years old. And the reason that we start them that young, because you can change personalities, you know, 7, 8 years old. But by the time they get 15, 16 in high school, and then 19, 20 when they come into college, it is hard.
They're a little bit more entrenched in who they are, right?
And who they are and how they do things. And they continue to do it the same way all the time. So it is just so hard. So, you know, I've always been a community servant. You know, since I was a little kid, you know, I was the student body president of my grade school, and not because I was that smart, but because I was popular. and I remember, like, there were times when we had recess breaks, and you would take naps. First of all, you have your milk and cookies if you had the money to.
Yeah, right.
To pay for the milk and cookies, you know.
Sure.
And which I didn't. And then it was white milk and white crackers. And then on Thursdays, never will forget it. And this is what I'm talking about, how things stay with you from the time you were a little kid, when you're 7, 8, 9 years old. And on Thursdays, you had graham crackers and chocolate milk. And that was big day.
Ooh, that's nice.
That was big day. And so.
Even today, that sounds lovely.
I'd like to have some of that right now.
Yeah, so would I.
But so anyway. You know, if you didn't have the money, what you had to do would lay your head down on the desk. So you would not have to watch the other kids eat.
Oh, jeez.
You know, that's pretty cool, huh? You're talking about cruel.
Yeah, that's a sad story.
Yeah, yeah. So anyway, when I got to be president of the student body, I came up with a program, a work program, that if you cleaned up around the building, I went to the principal, you cleaned up around the building, that you could, you know, get that, your milk and cookies, your recess money.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's where it probably started. And I always had a passion for helping other people.
And the principal went for that?
Yeah. Yeah.
And so what, like picking up trash and
Trash around the schools, not sweeping sidewalks, but picking up the trash around the schools.
Wow.
You know,
sure.
Doing those things. And so, you know, keeping it clean.
Yeah.
And so, but here's the thing about it though. You would say like, well, how did that work? Well, it worked easy because there weren't but about 8 or 9 kids that did it. Other kids,
sure, yeah.
they didn't do it, didn't want to work. Same problem that we're having today in our society. but, you know, that's where it all started. Now, fast forward to starting the academy, I saw the skills that was necessary that young people need to be successful in this world. Mm-hmm. Everyone, you don't have to graduate from college to be a success in life.
No.
But you have to have a marketable skill.
Sure.
Something that you can sell, you know. And so that is our goal. You know, we hope that everybody goes to college.
Yeah.
You know, the trades, that's an honorable profession, you know, so you can do a lot of things. Some of our kids have graduated, most of them go to college, 92% of them go to college. But, you know, there's some that go to the armed forces, they mm-hmm. go to become policemen, they become firemen, you know, there's a variety of
sure.
things.
Auto mechanics, whatever,
yeah,
right?
Yep, as long as you have a skill.
Yeah.
And so it has become just like a beautiful, beautiful, you know, passion. Now we're really strongly, you know, focusing on STEM, you know, science, yeah. technology, you know, engineering and mathematics. And we have, Southwest Airlines, give them a plug, about 4 years ago, they flew 40, you know, of the kids out to Pasadena to the JPL, Jet Propulsion Laboratory.
Oh, cool.
And so the kids saw the rover being built that we all saw when it landed on Mars.
No
that
kidding.
That rover we saw being built. And so
the kids in your 40 kids yep. from your academy got to go see the Mars rover.
Right.
Sweet.
And Chauncey went with us, you know, also. And it was awesome. You know, the things that we've done. And so this is a great segue to lead into Chauncey joining us 10 years ago.
Yeah.
He has been an instrumental, you know, part, you know, of the academy. He's been a godsend. And people were saying at one time.
I'm sorry to interrupt you. How did he come to be involved in it?
Well, easy. First of all, his father, I knew his father when his father was about 12 or 13 when I met his father.
Okay.
And so I'm an old dude. So his father and I, he knew me. Because a lot of my players he went to East High School.
Right.
I coached at Emmanuel. So a lot of my players were good friends of his.
Sure, of course.
You know, and so we've been on each other, you know, for a long, long time. He introduced me, and this is God's truth. He introduced me to Chauncey. I was coaching him at Regis mm-hmm. University in a part of my career. Introduced me to Chauncey. And so this is my son. Chauncey was about 9, 10
right,
years old.
Sure.
And said, he's really going to be a player. He's good. And I said, yeah, I heard that before.
Yeah, okay.
I heard that before. And so, and I tease Chauncey now about it. But Chauncey was just staring at me, and he never took his eyes off of me, you know, and we're talking about basketball, and he was just staring at me.
Right.
And I said, something different about this kid. And I didn't know, I'm telling you the truth. I like to say that I knew that he was going to be a player, you know, but I had no idea, but I knew that there was something special about him, and I didn't know what. But little kids that age are not that,
intense.
Have that much intense discipline.
Yeah.
And, so I'm looking at him. And so he goes to CU, he plays.
In high school, you said his dad went to East.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't Chauncey go to GW?
George, went to George.
Yeah, that's right.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, great.
Went to George,
Great career there.
Yep.
All everything. McDonald's All-American. He was just awesome. He was the man. King of Park Hill. Right. And all that, you know.
And I live in Park Hill now.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Cool. Yeah. Cool. I used to live in Park Hill.
I love Park Hill.
Yeah. Yeah. And he's, you know, nickname is Smooth. Mm-hmm. You know, that's Smooth.
That's cool.
I said, man, that's pretty cool, Chauncey. You know.
You're right.
So. We just had a ball. I didn't know him personally. Like, you know, it was a big, huge age difference. So we're not like running buddies.
right.
You know, but, we had a ball. Just every time we saw each other. I hear through the grapevine that he is interested in joining the PBLA, you know, taking part in it. And so I found him one day and I said, I heard that you was easy. Interested in the PBLA. And he says, yeah. He says, yeah, coach. He didn't call me LP then, but he called me.
Is that what he calls you now?
He called me coach. I told him to call me LP. And because coach, Ricardo Patton is one of my best friends, and that was his coach.
Yeah, old CU coach.
Yeah. Yeah, right. That was his coach. I said, you've had one guy. That's your coach, man. I said, call me LP.
Yeah.
You know? And so he says, yeah. So he was having a golf tournament up in Detroit. He was with the Pistons then. Mm-hmm. And I said, well, I'm going up there to play in the golf tournament. Myself, Wade Houston, Allen Houston, Ricardo Patton, we all going up there and to play in the tournament. Anyway, yeah. I said, let's talk then. And so he said, it'll be great. And so I met him up there before the tournament. We went into a little side room. We talked about 20 minutes max. And I said, look, you know, I said, you can't just lend your name, you know, to this and not do anything. I said, you're going to have to work.
Yeah.
You know, I said, because, you know, when I'm gone, you know, you and my daughter will run it. And so I said, are you up for that? And he says, yes, I am. And so I said, okay, you know, and that was it. And we was like two little proud kids.
It was simple as that, huh?
Yeah. Yeah. And so it was a lot of other things happened in between.
Sure.
You know, in those 20 minutes. That took about 30 seconds for me to tell you, John.
Yeah.
So he says, great. And so we started it, started going, and it just took off. And people said to me, I never forget this. Well, what about your legacy? I said, man, I don't have a legacy. Hmm. So what are you talking about? It's not about my legacy. It's about the kids.
It's
man.
About the work.
Yeah, it's about the kids, about the things that we can get accomplished. So Chauncey can get indoors. I can never get into.
Right.
You know, and I told him that, you know. And so it's been just beautiful, you know, because we have to raise X amount of dollars to make this thing work.
Yeah.
You know, someone, because the kids don't pay a dime, you know.
Of course not.
And so, long story short, as it relates to the kids, they stay in the program a minimum of 7 years.
Wow.
And so, after they stay 7 years, when they graduate from high school, we pay their college education.
No kidding.
We pay for their college education. And so, now, like some programs, they will pay just 1 year, you know, we pay for the entire 4 years.
Really?
We stay with them. So now, just like
here at Regis or wherever they go?
Here at Regis.
Okay,
here
great.
Here at Regis. One day I hope to raise enough funds so that wherever they go, we can do that. But they are just a joy. Just a joy. They are just so beautiful, man. It's unbelievable. You know, that's the story with the Academy, you know, in short form.
This is radio, not television. So you've got this open to a woman named Alma Vasquez, and tell me about her.
Alma Vasquez started with us when she was 9 years old, and now I think Alma is about she's probably about 28.
Okay.
She's a CPA.
Nice.
You know, and she travels all over the United States. She's making great money, and it's just a beautiful, beautiful, you know, story, you know, one that in a short form, she's the first graduate, one of the first graduates. Another young man, Jeremiah Keelan, is the other one. They graduated together, and they are both doing well. But, you know, Alma is probably like our poster child, you know, and she's on the cover of the Regis magazine for this summer.
and of all the good and great things that she's doing, you know, in our community. And she gives back. She's a mentor, you know, for the PBLA now. She's just beautiful. She's just beautiful. And naturally, we've had, you know, quite a few, you know, graduates. Yeah. Since 2006 is when she graduated. And the academy, let me tell you a little bit about the academy.
Yeah, please
also,
do.
Very diverse, but most of our kids are of color. Probably the numbers are something like 47% Hispanic.
Okay.
Probably about 33% African American. 8%, you know, probably white,
mm-hmm.
and then others. It's a very, very diverse, you know, program.
That's great.
And the kids are recommended by their principal and the homeroom teacher when they're little shorties, to get into the academy. And to see these kids, you know, and they're our kids. They're our kids because we have them from the time that they're 8 years old, some when they're seven, almost eight, until they graduate from college. So they stay with us 14, 15 years.
So they go to the three-week program. Mm-hmm. Are there other things throughout the year as well?
With the younger kids, we have a liaison person. Okay, we had three on our staff. Now we have about 23, 24 people on our staff now that work. Most of them are not year-round. But the liaison person is year-round. The recruiter is year-round. The assistant, the director of the program, who is my daughter, is year-round. And her assistant is year-round. But the rest of the staff, they work in the summer. And so we track, you know, so I track in the kids from the time they are in the eighth grade, you know, through high school, make sure they have taking the right courses so that they can go to college.
Yeah, yeah.
But the rest of the kids, most of the time, I'll be honest with you, we see them. We don't have – our staff is not large enough to track all of them. So what we communicate with the parents have to make a commitment, two things. One, when the kid is 9, 10 years old, having some difficulties, mm-hmm. you know, with discipline or whatever – they call the liaison person calls me. Then I go to the school to see that young man or young lady.
Yeah.
And then if they're doing something really good, we try to make every attempt to go to an award ceremony or those types of things. Try to give them a lot of support.
Yeah, of course.
But the parent has to be committed also, you know, to the program.
Yeah, that sounds amazing. And one of the things I'm curious about is you've been doing this for 20 years.
Correct.
How has your experience changed from starting to where you are now? And then related question, how have the skills that you've taught evolved in those 20 years?
Okay. Well, you know, for 20 years, when I first started, the time that I was spending is pale in comparison to the time that I spend now. It turned into like I was really doing two full-time jobs. Like I would meet with, say you, for example.
Yeah.
And I would leave the broadcast and I put my basketball hat on and go do something, you know, basketball related.
Sure.
So you're kind of torn. And so that is how, you know, it went, you know, then. Now, you know, I'm full time, you know, with the academy and with President Fitzgibbons, you know, helping out wherever I can. As it relates to development. What was the other question, John?
So how have the skills evolved that you've taught? Because, you know, 20 years ago, there wasn't the prevalence of social media. The internet wasn't what it was. I would say the culture has changed. How has the academy adjusted along with it?
Well, first of all, you know, STEM, you know, I couldn't even spell it 20 years ago.
Right.
Because, like, I am a dinosaur when it comes to technology.
Sure, yeah.
You know, but like I said, my grandson, my daughter, you know, and all of them.
And you're doing a podcast now of
podcast,
all things?
Yeah, you know, because I said to you, I said, you know, audience, you better, this is funny. I said, John, what is this called? ICAST?
You
said, no, podcast, coach.
Right.
And I'm trying to get it together, but I make sure that our kids, the curriculum has changed
you know, an awful lot. Just like I said, we were not doing anything basically, you know, 20 years ago when we first started with STEM. And, you know, we didn't have any computer classes. Yeah. We have computer classes now.
Yeah.
You know, on a typical day, they have the homeroom, you know, sessions in the morning. Then in the afternoon, they rotate. And whatever they're doing in their classroom and homeroom sections, when they rotate to the computers, both of those teachers work closely together on having assignments that they have to, you know, do the computer together. There was one company, one young person, a parent, and he gave us about 35. You know, computers to give to the kids.
Wow.
So it has changed, you know, immensely. And the topics are not so traditional. They branch out. They go down like Mitch Morrissey is on our board. And so they get a chance to go down to see peace and justice, you know, in action. You know, we have just so many things that are really modern, up to date, and things that have changed in the last 20 years that we wouldn't have even dreamed of. For example, Chauncey flew 15 of them, the older students, to Detroit when he was playing in Detroit, and they stayed at a five-star hotel, had a chef cook for them in the evenings at Chauncey's place, and going to the games. They were introduced, you know, at the Pistons game, and so they've had, you know, and the JPL, you know, in Pasadena, you know.
Yeah.
We never would have dreamed of that.
It was game-changing stuff.
Oh, it's awesome.
In your and I want to be sensitive to your time, so we got to wrap up here, but if everything broke the way you wanted it to, where do you see the PBLA going? What is your ideal vision for it?
Well, my ideal vision is this. First of all, I never wanted it to get so large that I don't know the kids, and it's gotten large. Now, I used to know all the names. I don't know all the names. You know, it's 150, you know, kids.
It's a lot of names.
But I know the faces. I would like to see it get up to probably about 250 in the summer. And the endowment, I would like for that to get up to so many million that it would be paid for.
Just self-sustaining.
Self-sustaining. Yeah. I would like for it to get there. And we have two different endowments. We have the annual support endowment, and we have the scholarship endowment. Mm-hmm. So we could get those things taken care of. We don't have to, you know, wouldn't have to worry about that. And one of the things that happens a lot of times is when the leader, so to speak, I started this, but we have three leaders now, my daughter and Chauncey. But I want to make sure that everything is in place, you know, so that it won't be in turmoil, you know, when the leader passes on.
Yeah.
And that happens a lot with a lot of programs. The succession plan is not put together very well.
Gotcha.
And I'm trying to get this, you know, so they won't miss a beat
all short
when I'm gone. That's what I would like to see. I would like to see happen. And I would like to see when our kids, you know, do graduate, they are starting to, you know, give back. They're young.
Yeah, yeah.
But your earning power usually, like, in the mid-40s is when you're able to start giving back, you know, for them to kind of like take this whole thing, you know, over.
Yeah.
That's what I would like to see happen because they're
– then it's full circle.
Yeah. Well, their goal is what I told them, you know, is that pay it forward. You don't have to do – you know, anything for me personally or for Chauncey or for Stacey or da-da-da-da-da,
right.
You do it, you know, for these other kids.
Yeah.
It's like Alma Vasquez being on the cover of this magazine. You know, we show this to little kids. Says she was here and show them pictures, you know, when she was here.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, said this can be you. This can be you.
Yeah. That's really great. Well, I'll tell you what, I'm happy to be able to highlight it here on the podcast. And you know, we're gonna push it out. I think this episode's gonna air. Oh, let's see here, 2 weeks from Wednesday. So, what date is that? That'll be the 24th, I believe. This will air. this is the time in the show where if people want to get involved in the PBLA, they want to give money, however they want to get involved, now's the time to tell them how. So let's plug stuff.
Porter-Billups.org is our website. Please go to it, and all the information is right there. We're having a big dinner, fundraiser on July 18th at the Ritz-Carlton. And then at Cherry Creek Country Club on Monday will be the golf tournament.
Fantastic.
And so we're excited about that, and it's a prime source for our kids.
So the timing of this is pretty good. It's coming up on a big on your big dinner and golf tournament. So I wish you guys the best, nothing but success, and thank you so much, Coach, for taking some time with me and just sharing your story. I loved hearing the basketball stories, and I loved hearing about the academy. So thank you very much.
Thank you, John. Thank you for having me.
And that wraps up episode 62 of the John of All Trades podcast with Lonnie Porter, founder of the Porter Billups Leadership Academy and former Regis men's head basketball coach. Just insanely privileged to get to spend some time with him. He is truly just a beautiful man and a wonderful human being doing great work. So to support the Porter Billups Leadership Academy, go to porter-billups.org and give them any support that you can, because their work is exceptional and vital. So we'll be back here next week. I'm coming back with a brand new show. It's another Menage a Pod. So we've got two guests. It's a lot of fun. I think you'll enjoy it. Check us out on Facebook and Twitter, JOAT Pod for both. That is where we announce new episodes each and every Monday. Episodes drop on Wednesday. They're available on iTunes, available on Stitcher. So give us a rating, give us a review, subscribe. They come directly to you. You don't have to do anything. It's what America's all about, really. Give me more content, feed it to me. I don't even want to find it. That's what we do here at the John of All Trades podcast. So until then, say goodnight, Green.